Right. So, are you able to see that? Right. I think you can see it now. Right. Okay. So here we have the screen being shared with the discourse from 1967. Now, it's a rather famous passage in the Zohar. Ikabazar, we learn in the Zohar. Tanya, we learn. Amar Rabbi Yossi said, Zimna Chada, it happened once.
What, excuse me, why aren't you singing the Niggun?
Well, I'm going to take this as the text.
Oh,
And
okay.
then after that, I'll sing the Niggun. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
Because normally we read a text from the Chumash and then we have the Niggun.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah,
Now, here I'm taking the Zohar as the text. So it says in the Zohar, Rabbi Yossi said, once it happened that the world have a tzricha alma lemitra, the world needed rain. Atula kameda Rabbi Shimon, they came to Rabbi Shimon, that's Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, the author of the Zohar. Because he explained the verse, he said a piece of Torah teaching. They thought he would maybe pray to God to ask for rain, but instead he said a Torah teaching on the verse. Hinei matov umanayim, how good and how pleasant, shevet achim gam yachad, when brothers sit together. And when he said this Torah teaching, the rain began to fall. And so that is the story in the Zohar, and that is going to be explored in this discourse in a number of different ways. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Right, so there we have this text in the Zohar. Umavaya Admu Maharash and Rab Shmuel, that is the fourth Lubavitcher Rebbe, he explains in a discourse that he said 100 years before this discourse was said. This discourse was said 1967, and Rab Shmuel said in a discourse of 1867. And we're missing out a few lines. Shahatam, that's line 15. The reason Shapa'al Yeridat Gushamim, the reason why he was able to bring about the rain, that the rain should fall, Al Yedei Amirat Torah, by saying a Torah teaching, Al Pasuk Zeh Dafka, particularly on this verse, Ki Pasuk Zeh, because this verse, Medaber is speaking of Me'er HaTov, of the goodness, She'al Yedei Yichud HaElyon, which comes through the unity of the upper, the supernal unity of two aspects of the Sfirot, the Ze'er Ampin V'Nukva. And now Ze'er Ampin V'Nukva, I want to see if I can maybe find this diagram that we can look at together so that we can understand what is Zeh Ampin and Nukva. So I'm going to stop sharing what we've been looking at and instead, good evening, Eleanor, and instead we're going to see this. Now, here we have a diagram of the Sfirot. So let's make it a little bit smaller. Right, so here we have them all together. So there's the infinite above, and then come Keter, crown, the divine will, and then the three sort of cerebral attributes, the cerebral svirot, wisdom, understanding, and knowledge. And then we have kindness, severity, mercy, victory, submission, dedication. And this is called Zeh Ampin, the small visage, literally, the small face, compared with Keter, which is the great face, the Arech Ampin. And so it's the union of these svirah, which are colored in blue, with the feminine, which is kingship. Jackie, that's very special seeing you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming. And we wish you long life and everything good in every way, only happiness in every aspect of life. Yeah. So this is the unity of these spherot, these upper spherot, the upper aspect, with kingship, which is also the feminine, the quality of fulfillment. So the verse, Hinei matovu monaim, how pleasant it is, shevet achim gam yachad, when brothers dwell together, is about this Kabbalistic explanation of the verse. It's about the unity of these upper sfirot and the lower sfirah, malchut, kingship, the feminine. Now, this is in the context, I'm just explaining it to Jackie so you understand where we're up to, and anyone else who just joined, that the world needed rain. There was a drought, it tells us in the Zohar. And people came to Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, and they asked him to do something about this. The world needs rain. And what he did was, he said a Torah. He said a Torah teaching on the verse, how good it is that brothers sit together, and it began raining. So now our discourse is explaining how that fits into the whole idea of rain. Because saying that how good it is that brothers sit together means the spherot being unified together. That this upper level, what's colored blue, this upper level of the spherot joins with the lower level, the feminine. That is what is meant by the brothers sitting together. And because of that, there is a flow in the svirot coming down from the higher level below. And because of them, because that was taking place in spiritual realms, because Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai was saying this Torah teaching, he activated the same thing in the physical world, and it began to rain here in our physical world. So that is the explanation of this passage of the Zohar. Now, what I'm going to do is stop sharing this and start sharing our discourse again. So in a moment, that should come up. Right. Okay, so here we have, because this verse, that's line 16, this verse is speaking about the goodness that comes about through the unity of the upper dimension of Zeh Ampin, which means those higher svirah, Venukva, and the feminine, Shezel Atzmo, Shoresh Inyan, and that itself, that spiritual unity, is the root of the idea of the rain falling, which is here described in terms of a verse where God says, V'natati gishmech itam, I will give your rain in their time, in the right time. Hainu sheyarada geshem min hashamayim, that means the rain fell from heaven. V'hivay et haaretz, and it impregnated the earth. V'holida v'hitzmicha, and it made the earth give forth fruit as if it were bearing children. And that is a gilui koach ein sof, that's a revelation of the power of infinity, the way in which the crops continue to grow all the time. Shezeu tochen ha'inyan de yichud zeh ampin v'nukfa. And that is what the unity in the Sfirot, that's actually what this unity of the Sfirot is about. So the unity of the Sfirot is what causes the crops to grow. And so by Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, saying a Torah teaching, which caused a unity in the Sfirot, that is what enabled the rain to fall so that the crops would grow. So that's so that was the way in which Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai responded with a Torah teaching. Now, this is actually very striking. It's very unusual in the Talmud, where there's often an issue all about rain. There's actually a whole section of the Talmud, Masechet Ta'anit. It's a tractate which deals with the problem of the rain not falling when there's a drought. And the name Ta'anit shows you what the normal response is. Fasting. It's not saying Torah. Fasting is a kind of an intense form of prayer. So we have here in the discourse that Reb Shmuel, who is the fourth Lubavitcher Rebbe discussing this idea, he continues by commenting, Shematzinu etzel kamatanim tanaim. We found among a number of the sages of the Mishnah, who are mentioned in the Talmud, the earlier sages, Shepa'alu yiridat kshamim. They were able to achieve the rain al-yedei inyan ha-tfila through prayer or intense prayer. V'gam al-yedei ta'anit, and also through fasting. V'ad shematzinu shahayu gozrim yudgimu ta'aniyot, till they even would decree that there should be 13 fasts. So those 13 fasts are a response to the way in which the rain hasn't yet fallen, and the 13 fasts are described in this tractate, Ta'anit, the tractate called Fasting, which is actually about trying to get the rain to fall. The Hachidush of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, the special thing, the new thing that Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai brings, who Shepa'al Yeridat Kshamim, is that he caused the pouring of rain al yidei amirat Torah, through saying Torah. Now, that's setting up the discourse, as it were, and what it's going to proceed to discuss are the differences between Torah and prayer. And if we manage to look at it as well, there's a section on the difference between prayer and blessing. So these are all different ways in which people, sometimes great people, are able to draw God into changing the situation in the world, that there's something negative taking place in the world, and usually by a form of prayer, sometimes by blessing, the person is able to change that situation. As we understand that when there's a time of trouble, we pray to God with the hope that God will listen to our prayer and change the situation. However, what is interesting here is the idea that this is here being achieved by Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai saying Torah. Now, this discourse was said on the Shabbat, like our Shabbat. So although it's all about Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and the Zohar, which relates to Lag BaOmer, which is the special day of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. And the Rebbe suggests that the discourse he's discussing by the fourth Rebbe, Reb Shmuel, was actually said on Lag BaOmer, on the 33rd day of the Omer. But this discourse was not. This discourse was said on the Shabbat before, presumably, before Shavuot, as our Shabbat is the Shabbat before Shavuot. And the point which I think the discourse brings to Shavuot is that it brings out the idea of what Torah is, the revelation of Torah. And then eventually the discourse will start speaking about Moses himself and the special spiritual quality that Moses was trying to achieve through his pleading with God to go into the land of Israel, but what he's actually achieving through his giving of the Torah. So that's the sort of the way in which the discourse, which is talking about Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai and the fact that the world was in a state of drought, and he said Torah and he brought rain. So that's the way it fits in, as I understand it, to our current point in the calendar, where this Shabbat will be the Shabbat before Shavuot. Because the point about Shavuot being that our tradition is that that's the time the Torah was given, even though it doesn't actually say that in the Torah. The sages work it out by considering that Shavuot is 50 days after going out of Egypt, after Pesach. And so Pesach commemorates going out of Egypt. And what happens 50 days after going out of Egypt? They work out that is when the Torah was given. So that is Chagat Shavuot. Now, section bed of the discourse. First, let me ask, is everyone okay so far? Do you all understand it so far? Are there any questions, any problems? It's all clear. Oh, and Jackie is saying it's been raining the past 2 months every day in Basel. All right, well, there must be a very spiritual dimension to that. Thank you, Jack. Right. Okay. So let's go back to the text. Right. Section Bet. Ulahavina chidosh Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. To understand the new point that Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai brings, shepa'al yehidit shamim, he caused it to rain. Al yedei amirat Torah, through saying Torah. So we should first consider the hachiluk bein tefillah leTorah. Well, let's see the difference between prayer and Torah, as is explained in the discourse by Reb Shmuel, the fourth Rebbe. Shahatfilah hi milamata lemaila. Prayer goes from below to above. Now, that's a fairly understandable thing. We are here, human beings in the world. We need something, or there's some issue. We pray to God. The prayer comes from us going heavenwards towards God. By contrast, v'ha-Torah, Torah, hi milamayla lemata, comes from above to below. God teaches Torah, and the Torah percolates downwards from God through the sages and comes to us. So therefore, Torah is something coming from above to below. So now we're going to see what is the significant difference in this process between prayer and Torah, and the idea of moving from below to above or from above to below. Sheperush melamata lemailahu. The meaning when it says it goes from below to above, prayer goes from below to above, is shelefi erech hachanat klei hamekabel, according to the extent of the preparation of the lower vessel, the vessel which is going to receive. Yes, because in this reaching from below to above, one is reaching upwards in order to get something from above downwards. And so it's like a vessel. One is reaching upwards with a vessel towards the divine. And according to the way that this vessel is prepared in this arousal from below, kein nimshach milamayla, so there comes about a flow from above lamata to below, beitaruta de la'ela, in this response from above. So in other words, prayer has to be in a kind of pure state in order for us to pray to God with the idea that our prayer is going to have an effect. Of course, everyone has to pray to God all the time anyway. There are daily prayers, there are blessings before food, blessings after food, grace after meals. There are three daily prayers, which we're supposed to say. Women generally say the first and the second, the morning prayer and the afternoon prayer. So we don't necessarily think of this as something that we purify ourselves for, although even in the case of daily prayer, there are many men, for example, particularly in the Hasidic movement, who go to a mikveh every morning to purify themselves, so that their prayer should be said in a pure way. But apart from these daily prayers, if God forbid there's some problem in a person's life, someone is, God forbid, ill, very often people go to a righteous person, especially righteous person, to ask them to pray on their behalf. And that is because this construct that it presents over here, that in order for the prayer to have effect, it works best if the one praying is in a very pure state, and then that person is able to draw down a response from above. So there is this concept of purity in prayer, even though we're all instructed to pray, and we try to pray, and we try to be as pure as we can. But prayer does seem to have with it this theme of purity, in order to get the desired response. Line 7, Avul Torah, but by contrast, Torah hi bechinat yitaruta de le'ele mitzad atzma. Torah is an arousal from above, from God, in itself, coming from God. In other words, God pours down Torah. It's as if he's not looking at who's getting it. The Torah is coming to us. It might come to people who are in a problematic situation, morally or spiritually. But nonetheless, the Torah pours down to us from heaven. God says the Ten Commandments at Sinai, and we transmit those Ten Commandments. We transmit them through the world, through every kind of situation that there might be. Torah is pure. Torah is not affected by our impurity. The Talmud makes the statement divrei Torah einam mekablim tumah. Words of Torah do not acquire impurity. And the reason is, I think, if I remember rightly, it says about the Torah, kol dvarai ke'esh, my words are like fire, says God. So fire doesn't acquire impurity. So if the Torah is fire, and the fire is coming down like from Mount Sinai, from heaven, to us, that Torah cannot be defiled. And so it makes no difference, seemingly, what kind of person we are. The Torah comes to us, and we have the opportunity to study Torah. There's a lot of discussion among the sages. Can you teach Torah to someone who is not a perfect person? And there were different views about this in the Talmud. There was one great rabbi, Rabban Gamliel. He refused to teach anyone Torah unless, as he put it, their inside is like their outside. In other words, outside, they might wear the clothes of a rabbi, but inside, are they a rabbi? They might be a very nasty person, and they're just hypocritically wearing the clothes of a pure rabbi on the outside, but so really inside, they weren't like that at all. So he did not want such people to study in the yeshiva. And then another rabbi took his place. And the other rabbi, Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, we mention him in the Haggadah of Pesach. He says, I'm like 70 years old, because when he became the head of the yeshiva, he wasn't 70. And his only flaw was that he wasn't old enough to be the head of the yeshiva. So overnight, some of his hair turned white, so he looked old enough. That's why he says, I'm like 70 years old. And he became the head of the yeshiva. And he said, you know what? Anyone who wants to come and study can come in. And they had to arrange lots of new chairs or benches for all the new students who were coming, who were not so perfect. Their inside wasn't quite like the outside. And nonetheless, they wanted to learn Torah. And the conclusion that the Talmud comes to is that it was quite right what he did. The idea of restricting Torah to a spiritual elite is a problematic idea. Torah has to be available. And here we have an endorsement of that. Torah comes from above to below. Whatever the situation of the person below, it might be a positive situation, might be negative in spiritual terms. Nonetheless, the Torah comes to us. Now, all this, in a sense, it's not really spelled out in the discourse, but it's telling us something about what is happening at Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah, which takes place on Shavuot. The Torah comes to us, and whatever kind of person we are, the Torah is there for us. And in fact, the sages say, see, there's the ideal of a person studying Torah for its own sake, really for the sake of God. But people often study Torah for different reasons. There's a lot of kudos in knowing Torah. You know, people might look up to someone who's a Torah scholar. So this is regarded by someone like Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Ladi as a terrible reason for studying Torah. He sees that as a very erroneous way of approaching Torah. Torah should be in order for us to connect with the divine, not the admiration that we get by other people around us. But nonetheless, there are people who do study Torah in that way. And the Talmud is aware of that. And it says, better for people to study Torah not for its own sake, in other words, for the wrong reasons, because if they start studying Torah, maybe the Torah will have an effect on them, and it'll, from the beginning where it wasn't for its own sake, it'll end up in a more positive way, and it will be for its own sake. So here we have the idea of Torah coming to us from Mount Sinai, from God, through the chain of teachers, through the generations, and being given to us. And if we are not quite worthy to receive the Torah, well, the onus is on us. Let's try and make ourselves a little bit more worthy. I think that's part of the subtext of this particular discourse. Now we're going into this, line 12 on page Zion. We're going into this in a little more detail, but let me see if there are any questions from anyone. Any comments, questions? Rabbi Lu, any question, comment?
It's a little bit of a tangential, but the day when that maimer was said, it's what you mentioned right at the beginning. First of all, it was the week of Lag BaOmer. Lag BaOmer was on a Sunday, and this is on the 24th of Iyar. It's also famous for being 2 days before the Six-Day War broke out. And the Rebbe spoke about Mitzvah Tefillin, and it was like a very historic occasion. I was here in England that I was on a weekend in Ramsgate, but it was a moment when everybody remembers where they were. So that might be the connection with Lag BaOmer, part of it. It's like the whole idea of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai represented the miraculous being connected, like you said, the Zohar and Malchus, the unity, unification of the transcendent with the world. It was a time when we saw really miraculous occurrences in this physical world. Just, you know, it's not, it's not on the content, but just on the context.
Very interesting. So one way of understanding the discourse is to bring about a kind of unity in the sphera, in the divine sphera. And I mean, one of the arguments you see between the Lubavitcher Rebbe and the Satmara Rebbe was that the Satmara Rebbe said that the Jews in Israel, they're not religious, they're not keeping Torah properly. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe, in this discourse, is saying that Torah, the healing power of Torah, comes down even if you're not perfect. And it's bringing about a unity, it's bringing about the rain, the positive blessing, even for imperfect people, you know. So one could maybe read that in to the discourse, given that, as Rabbi Lewis just pointed out, it was just before the Six-Day War. Eve, you wanted to say something?
I wanted to sort of ask a bit about this contrast with prayer, because people have to pray three times a day, so clearly can't be useless.
Can't be?
Useless.
Right, I mean, absolutely. It's certainly not useless. It's not
so,
useless.
I mean, right, so it's got to, in some sense, have some effect, no?
Yes, yes. So the point is, it's very likely that the person who is praying, the very fact that they're praying to God, in a sense, lifts them to a higher level. Especially in our epoch, incidentally, when it's very easy for people to be in a very secular vein of mind. And so if a person is going to pray, they are moving into a more spiritual perspective. But even if we didn't have that, the very fact it is a mitzvah of the Torah that if one needs something, one should pray to God about it. But nonetheless, you know, who is it who fill the synagogues, let's say? Normally, it's the people who are a bit more observant. So the idea that, you know, if a person isn't, doesn't believe, isn't observant, are they going to pray? But it's very interesting. I mean, there's this saying, an English saying, no one in a foxhole is an atheist. If people are in dangerous situations, I remember my wife was, she would do these. Nicole, you want to say something? Nicole, are you saying that you want to say something? No.
Can I say something?
Yeah. Okay, just one second, Rivka.
Yeah.
I'm just let me finish what I was saying, because Nicole, I thought, had her hand up.
She was just complimenting. She had a thumbs up. About no atheist in a foxhole.
Yeah. So I think that maybe the situation of being in a foxhole brings out the point of purity within the person. That moment when the person is praying, that is itself the point of purity within them.
Okay. That works.
Rivka, did you want to say something?
Yes. Actually, the Torah comes from above, but the appreciation depends on the person who accepts it. So really, if it's not a very high, let's say not high, very, very high level. So when he reaches out in his prayer, it's not too high, but also when he gets the Torah from above, it won't be that that deep or high.
You mean the Torah can come to us from above, but we don't appreciate it?
Some will be appreciated less than others. So the very Holy One will reach higher in his prayer and also will accept much deeper the Torah from above.
You're right, but in the story from the Zohar, it was by saying the Torah that the rain began to fall. Now, when the rain falls, that's good for everyone. there's the more spiritual farmer, the less spiritual farmer. Everyone is trying to plow the ground and get the crops to grow. And if it rains, so that's good for the crops, you know, assuming that it is. Whether 2 months of rain in Basel is good for the crops, a different issue. So you're right in terms of our internalization of Torah. And there are many, many levels of that. But the sense in which the giving of the Torah, you know, drenching us, the Jewish people, with the Torah, which is, in a sense, what happens at Mount Sinai. God says the Ten Commandments, and we are, which according to many sages, include in some way the entire 613 commandments. And there we are drenched with Torah in a most amazing way, whether we were expecting that or not expecting it, whether we appreciated it or didn't appreciate it. Of course, the extent to which we internalize it is something very individual, and each person internalizes it in a different way and to a different degree. Yeah, so that point is taken, Rivka. Okay, so let's go a little bit further. So let's just look at this line 12, going into it in more detail. Ubipchatiyut yoter. Hinea Torah idvar Hashem shenimshach lamata. Torah is the word of God, which is drawn down below. Ve'ein ze talui ba'avodat ha'adam. It does not depend on the service of the individual, milamata lamana, from below to above. Our service does not affect whether the Torah comes pouring down to us from God. Ubefrat al pi hamavor belikutei Torah. Now it says in Hasidic teachings, beferush b'midbar Sinai, considering the phrase in the Sinai desert, the desert of Sinai. Shebchinat midbar, that the word midbar, desert, now this phrase in Song of Songs is explained as meaning your words are comely, your words are beautiful. So the word midbar means desert, but dalet beit reish means speech. And the mem at the beginning can be understood as a prefix, like you have various prefixes in Hebrew. Bahu in yan dibur haTorah. This is the word of Torah. Shetzarich liot betachlit habitul. Words of Torah have to be in a way of selflessness. So when we hear Torah, when the Torah comes to us, and this relates to what you were saying, Rivka, we need to be selfless in order to really absorb the words of Torah, and that's a and so therefore, k'mavor b'makom acher, it says elsewhere, b'peidush midbar, and the word midbar, which can mean desert, or it can mean dabar, meaning speech, but tosefet mem, with the addition of mem, which is a suffix, it's a prefix. Shuhumi otiyot hemantiv. These letters, hey, aleph, mem, nun, tat, taf, yud, vav, are all letters which can come before a verb or a word in Hebrew in order to give, sort of to define its meaning in some way. And so that means it's not speech in itself, but it's something that was already spoken. And that means that the speech is in a way of selflessness with the speech of God, which is speaking in it. As we say, Ta'an l'shoni imratecha, let my tongue repeat, respond to your words. Shahatorah hi imratecha, the Torah is your God's words, your God's saying, Ele sheloshoni ta'an, but my tongue will respond to it, responding to what God says. So the words of Torah are like God speaking. We then read the Torah and we are reading or saying what God says. So the study of Torah is like the person and the divine. The divine is presenting the Torah and we are saying the words of Torah, which is like saying what God is saying to us. Like the phrase in the Midrash, the divine presence, the Shekhinah, speaks within the throat of Moses. Now the Rebbe has just, now that shows us that Moses is a very, very great, exalted tzaddik, very great person. The Shekhinah spoke within him. But the way the Rebbe is using this to illustrate a process, that takes place, when we learn Torah, we're not Moses. Nonetheless, when we learn Torah, the words that we are saying are coming from God because we're reading words that come from God. And it's that which is in our mouths. And that's the way we are responding. We're saying the words that come from God. The Rebbe is comparing that, if I understand it correctly. The Rebbe is comparing that to the very exalted spiritual example of the divine presence speaking within Moses. So when we learn Torah, it's something extremely exalted. Now this is also, and now here we're on the next page, page Zion. This is also the point, the Torah is called food from heaven. Now, the typical food from heaven is the manna from heaven, which they got in the desert and they were able to eat, which comes up in the Sedra before the giving of the Torah. So, Kamohaman, like the manna, Shelohaya Talui Bavodat Adam, it didn't depend on the service, the work of the person, but Harisha, plowing, Zriya, planting, and all the other things that a person has to do in order to produce grain and then grind that and into flour and then bake that into bread. The manna didn't need any of that because the manna was food from heaven, which doesn't depend on the service from below, the service of those who are below. And therefore the manna reached everyone equally. And even up to the point, when some people tried to collect a lot of manna and some people did less, nonetheless, the one who collected a lot didn't end up having any more, and the one who collected only a little didn't have any less. Because it was the same for every Jew, for the whole of the Jewish people, without distinctions. So then he talks about certain skin distinctions, parent distinctions, but the fundamental thing is, line 14, that the manna came equally to everyone, even the same quantity to everyone, how much more it's the same quality to everyone. And even the people who rejected the manna. Later on, we have the story of people being very upset about the manna. They say, all we've got is this spiritual food. We don't enjoy it. But nonetheless, for them too, the manna was something very spiritual and an important ingredient for them. So that's the manna. So that manna represents the Torah. The manna is food from heaven. V'dugmato gam b'Torah. Similarly, with the Torah, shenikret lechem min ha-shamayim, which is called food from heaven, as well. Shehu inyan ha-nimshach min ha-mayim, because Torah comes from above. She'ein ha-talui b'avodat ha-adam l'mata, and it does not depend on the service of the person below. Ma she'ein kein tefillah, well, tefillah is different. That is avodah milamata lamaila. That's a service from below to above. V'chayadua, as is known, shahatfilah is sulam mutzavatza. Prayer is like a ladder standing on the ground. V'roshom magi'ah shamayma, and its head reaches heaven. Sha'al Yada, and it's through that ladder of prayer, Mitale Adam, the person rises, man or woman, rises higher, Ba'avodato, in his or her service, Me'atza, from being on the earth, Hashemaima, to being in heaven. In other words, we're trying to get higher. The idea of prayer, prayer itself is a kind of ladder going upwards. And so the whole idea of prayer is coming to a higher place, more pure, more positive, more spiritual, more holy. And then the Rebbe launches into something which he very often explores, which is the process of daily prayer. Behind that means, line 24, Shahat Halat Abudah, the beginning of the daily service for each person, is on the lower levels. And after that, the person goes a bit higher in his or her service. Till he or she reaches the heavens. And in more detail, the very beginning of the day, it's by the person saying the prayer, Modi Ani, I thank you. I thank you, God. Modi Ani lefanecha melech chai b'chaim. I am grateful to you, God, great and exalted King, that you have given me back my soul. You've given me back my soul when we wake up in the morning. Our soul comes back to me. Great is your faithfulness. Now that prayer, that simple prayer, which traditionally that's the first thing a person says when they wake up in the morning, this thanking of God. It's just a matter of thanking God. Without any deep understanding or deep ideas, it's just a simple thing. Thank you, God, for keeping me alive, sending my soul back to me, so to speak, so that I wake up in the morning. Now, as regards understanding, a person hasn't really thought about it at all. When we say Moda Ani in the morning, thanking God. But nonetheless, it's the beginning of a process. Now the Rebbe goes a little bit further in the daily prayers, because an important beginning point within the prayers, long after Moda Ani, is Hodu Lashem. This is in the Hasidic rite, where Hodu Lashem is the sort of the basic beginning of the prayers. The Ashkenazi rite, it's slightly different. There's something before Hodu, that's Baruch Shama. But here we have this idea of this beginning of with Hodu Lashem, thank God, praising God, praise be God. And this itself is another example of hoda'ah, an acceptance and a praise of God, v'lo havanava hasiga, without understanding much. The afshe b'entayim nitale. Now, even though in between the person said moda'ani, then they got washed negel vasa, they washed their hands, then they got dressed and so on. And now they're standing in the beginning of the prayer. And so there's quite a gap between moda'ani a while ago and the beginning of prayer with Hodu, but nonetheless they're saying Hodu Lashem and Kiru Bishmo, call on God, thank God, call on God's name. So he still doesn't yet understand fully, and then v'achakach, and after that mitale yoter, then the person goes up higher. Remember, treating prayer as daily prayer in the morning as a ladder that we're climbing up. So we climb up a bit further, and we climb up, and we climb up, and then we come, Uvalo Voda Dishma Yisrael. We come to the special moment of service and connection with God, of Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. And then we go even higher. We come to a state of absolute giving oneself over to God, standing immobile, saying the Amida prayer, the 18 benedictions. So Avdakamamare, like a servant before his master. Shekol zeh inyan ha-talui ba-avodat ha-adam. All this depends on the service of the person, milamata lamaila, climbing higher from the lower level upwards. Now that's a beautiful description of prayer. I'm giving the point of prayer being a kind of ladder. And we start at the beginning of the ladder, and then we slowly climb up a little bit more, climb up a little bit more. And it's up to us how we approach it and whether we actually are climbing in some way or are we just saying the words. Each one of us is able to address ourselves with that question. So that's prayer, the process of prayer. Umavaya b'mayma, and it explains in this discourse, shekamoa hefresh bein tefillah l'torah, like the difference between prayer and Torah. Kamochein, all right, so here it goes into another explanation about prayer and blessings. So it's an interesting, subtle difference that blessing is in some way, it's there above already, and the person giving the blessing is able to release it for the person they're blessing. Whereas prayer is going from the bottom upwards and appealing to God to change the decree in some way. Okay, so we'll miss that out. V'hine yeridat kshamim, right? So this is page 10. Now, the rain beginning to fall, that's something that comes from above to below through the service of the person. And the Rebbe quotes a verse which indicates that when the people are stubborn, then there's a drought. Then they stop being stubborn, and at once the rain starts falling. Whereas dew, now here's the difference between rain and dew. Dew comes even if there's no service from below. The dew is never withheld. In the Tanakh, there's generally, in the Bible, there's generally the feeling that there's a drought because people didn't behave properly, so there's a drought. Then they pray to God, they repent, and the rain starts falling. Whereas dew is always there, however people behave. So we understand from this that when we have to achieve the pouring of rain, which comes through the kind of service, the kind of behavior that people have, we would normally approach that through prayer, because the idea of prayer is reaching up to God from below to above, and we're trying to make ourselves better. We're trying to improve ourselves. We're trying to say, look, God, we are fasting, we're giving charity, we're being good boys, we're behaving the right way. Please send rain. And so we make this effort. All right, we're going to miss this out. And so that is the situation with prayer. Prayer is a matter, and this is also responding to your point before, Eve. With prayer, we try to improve ourselves as we're praying. The very fact that we pray and what we do, you know, especially in repeated prayers over, you know, several days, we're trying to bring out our best side. And when we pray, it's our best side that we show. That's one of the aspects of Jewish prayer. You could say that's one of the reasons why there's a mechitza in the traditional synagogue, that people should not be distracted into a sort of more physical or earthly way of looking at things. We should have a spiritual perspective and try to be gazing heavenwards towards the divine. Now, then comes, now comes a crucial point. Now we're going to see, having presented the idea that a unique aspect of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai in terms of the sages of the Talmud, comparing him with the other sages in the Talmud, is that he was able to bring rain by saying a Torah teaching while the others would pray or would sometimes fast, as expressed in the tractate Ta'anit about fasting, which is about getting rain when it's needed. So now, in Rav Shmuel's discourse of 1867, right? 100 years before the Six-Day War and before this discourse was said. So it continues in the discourse. The reason why the rainfall fell through the saying of Torah by Rabbi Shimon bar Yochanan was because, and it's specifically by Rabbi Shimon bar Yochanan, he's the one who's able to say a Torah teaching and make it rain, is because the way that he studied Torah, the fish iskova Torah, the way he studied Torah, Hayaba Ofen Shechibes Satim Begalia. He studied Torah in such a way he joined the hidden and the revealed. Now the thing is, there were other great sages, and it goes through various other sages. But they, even though they studied the esoteric dimension, but they could not reveal it. And that's the thing about the esoteric dimension. By, if you like, in English, by definition, it's esoteric. Therefore, it can't be revealed. It's hidden. And the Talmud speaks about that. There's a tractate called Chagigah. And in Chagigah, there's a chapter which says, Ein Dorshin, we do not teach the work of the chariot, which is a Kabbalistic aspect of Torah. One does not teach the work of the chariot to someone unless they know it by themselves, is what it really amounts to. You can't teach it to someone who doesn't know anything about it. So if they don't know anything about it, how will they ever learn? So sort of the Talmud sort of discusses this backwards and forwards. But if you want to know about it, you'll somehow find out about it enough to be able to be taught. But you can't teach someone who doesn't know anything. So in other words, the esoteric remains esoteric. The concept of the esoteric is an extremely intriguing idea in world thought. And many books have been written about that. And I'm sure Eve herself in her writing sometimes approaches this subject. The idea of the esoteric dimension compared with the exoteric, that which is revealed. And that's a very fascinating thing. So, but Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, first of all, he was quite openly learning the inner dimension. Now, who was he learning with? He was not learning with everyone. He had a little group of people called the Chavraya, the friends. He had this little group of disciples, and with him, he was teaching them. And that's what the Zohar actually records. It's these discussions by Rabbi Shimon and his group of disciples. And he said, Sharabi Abba Yichtov, he tells Rabbi Abba, one of these disciples, that he should write down what has been said. While the others, Ushar Hevraya, but the others, rabbis, rabbi students, Yichashun Bilibayu, they should whisper it in their hearts. So in other words, Rabbi Abba, not only does he take these Torah teachings inside him the way the other sages did, he had to also write it down, which is a level of publicization. So there we have the step of publicizing something. And the fact that even though it was a relatively small group, this Chavraya, but it was still a group, 10 maybe of people. So this is in a way of revealing the inner dimension of Torah. So one aspect is that with this group of disciples, he's teaching them, and he's even telling one of them to write it down, which became eventually the Zohar book. Of his teachings. So here we have the idea of publicizing the inner dimension of Torah. And then there's another point. Shechiber pnimiyuta Torah im galyada Torah. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai was able to connect the esoteric dimension of Torah with the revealed dimension of Torah. The revealed dimension of Torah is most of what the Talmud is about, Jewish law and all the subtleties of Jewish law, which verse in the Torah it comes from. how it works, how it's applied, certain enactments the rabbis might have made about it, and what the different opinions are of how to do it. That's the revealed dimension of Torah. Now, Rabbi Shimon is extremely prominent in the entire Talmud, in all the areas of the revealed dimension of the Torah. He was very much a master of all of the revealed dimension of Torah. So when he is communicating the inner dimension, he's actually connecting them together. Shechiber pnimiyot haTorah, he was able to join the inwardness of Torah with the revealed dimension of Torah. And in such a way that that union is then able to flow into the world. And so that's why he was able to make the rainfall by saying Torah from above to below. Because even though the world wasn't purified yet, nonetheless, he was able to get the rain to fall by saying a Torah teaching about the Sfirot. Ostensibly, it's about how nice it is for brothers to sit together. It's a poem, it's a verse about friendship. There's a very popular song, Hine Mato Gumanayim Shevet Achim Gam Yachad. So it's a modern song, how good it is to be friends together. It's sung throughout the Jewish world, and it's a very interesting song. He was able to take that on its inward dimension about the Sfirot being unified together, as we saw before. And as a result, it began to rain. So what is happening? He is revealing something spiritual, but making the spiritual dimension interleave with the revealed dimension of Torah. And in that way, he was able to bring the rain from above to below, even to a world which was not purified. And I must say, I wasn't thinking of this when I learned the discourse before, and the draft summary, which I sent out, doesn't refer to it in this way. But when Rabbi Liu mentioned that this was just before the Six-Day War, I began thinking of this as a way of saying that even those that some people say are imperfect, nonetheless, God's radiance should shine on them, God's blessing should pour down to them like the rain falling on the ground and making the ground grow. And this expression of this is what Torah is all about.
Right.
Now, so now let's one second. Now we're coming from Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai to Moses. So that is section Hey, which is on page Yud Gimel, page 13. The Yesh Hosif, now one can add, even though this drawing down of a flow through the saying of Torah, the rain coming down, through the saying of Torah, without the realm below making any effort. This is a very exalted thing that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai managed to reveal the power of this. Now, this actually was the request of Moses. Moses was asking God, later in the Torah, Moses was asking God that he should be the one bringing the Jewish people into the land of Israel. And the reason he wanted to do that particularly is because he wanted to give them, he wanted to bequeath to them hakoach, the power, that they should be able to draw down through Torah study hamshachat or ein sof, the flow of the radiance of the infinite, in a way of an arousal from above mitzad atzma, in itself, the radiance coming from above in itself, without milamayla lamata, from above to below, without having anything positive about the lower level, which is the sort of reason why we can ask that this flow should come to us. It's something that should be there without, quite completely independent of the behavior of the lower dimension, of the level of holiness or spirituality or not, of the lower dimension. And Moses wanted to bequeath this to the Jewish people. It's a very dramatic image, because Moses was begging God, Ve'et Hanan, I pleaded with God to allow me to go into the land of Israel. And what this discourse is saying is this is what he was really pleading. It's not that he just wanted to go into the land of Israel. He wanted to bequeath this to every Jew, that they should have the power to draw down Torah from above to below, whatever the negative possibly negative situation of the level below. Line 14, Avalo Pa'alze, but he didn't achieve this. Moses did not achieve that he should go into the land of Israel, as we all know, and he didn't achieve that he could bequeath this to every Jew, that we could all have that power. But he wanted to. Go up to the head of this rock, the mountain, Hanavo, Mount, and look, look at the whole land. Now, look at the whole land. This is very significant. Look at the land, see the land. Through the sight, that he saw the land of Israel from afar. He was able to transmit this quality, al kol panim, at least to a certain number of special individuals, like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and his colleagues, who were totally involved with Torah study the entire time, that they would be able to draw down through their Torah teachings the arousal from above, mitzad atzma, which comes from itself, milamayla lamata, and that should flow from above downwards. Shezel gam inyan ariya, that's also the flow of Torah, is also like the idea of sight, seeing, shemilamayla lamata, which is also from above downwards. So Moses, let's get this story right. Moses wanted to go into the land of Israel so that he could give the entire Jewish people the power to draw down this infinite quality of Torah into the world below, even if it's an imperfect world. He didn't succeed in that. But what did happen is that God told him to go up to this high place and look at the land, and he looked, and his look had tremendous power in it. That look gave the ability, at least to certain chosen individuals, like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, that they should be able to draw down Torah from above, from its very exalted realm above, and down into the world. Avu Benageya, but concerning L'chol B'nei Yisrael, the rest of the Jewish people, Nehemiah says for them, now, V'ata Yisrael, now, Jewish people, Shema, listen, hear. Shehu inyan ha'avana v'saga bilvad. This is understanding, but understanding is something that goes from below to above. We look at something that we can't understand, we start thinking about it, we begin to work it out, we can understand it. and that is hearing and not seeing. Seeing is something from above to below, and hearing is something from below to above. So Moses, as regards the entirety of the Jewish people, most people, he was able to give them the power of listening to Torah, which is itself special. But the idea of Torah as sight, that he was only able to transmit to a few unique individuals, like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, like the Lubavitcher Rebbe, like this chain of special people through the age. However, Mikol Makom, nonetheless, Adidei Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, through Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Nasa Tichat Hatzinur, he opened the channel. Now that is a very interesting thing. He opened the channel. And the Rebbe says, Kayadua ha'inyan de patach, as is known what it means, the word patach. Now in the Zohar, when it wants to say Rabbi Shimon said something, it says patach Rabbi Shimon. He opened, because in the discourse is here giving an explanation. He opened the channel. He said something, but by saying that, he's opening a channel. And the channel is L'chol Yisrael, for every single Jew. Shegam etzlam yeshayach inyan zeh, that they will also have this power. So Moses wanted to give this power to every Jew. That's the power to draw down Torah from above and transmit it to a world which is imperfect. Moses did not succeed in that ambition, but he did succeed in the idea that at least he'll be able to give it to a few great people like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai succeeded in opening the channel for the entire Jewish people, that we should also have that power to teach Torah in an imperfect world. And we find a similar thing with understanding the Torah. There's a famous idea that there's someone who worked out a very subtle idea in the Torah, and then he goes to the study house, and everyone is there in the study house talking about the same thing that he's just worked very hard to discover, and he thought it was a beautiful original discovery, and now people are talking about it in the study house, independently of him. But the Arizal said to him, Rabbi Isaac Luria said, listen, you open the channel. That's why they're talking about it in the study house. You didn't tell them, but spiritually you open the channel, and so therefore other people have discovered this as well. And similarly, we find with the Magid, the second leader of the Hasidic movement, Rabbi Dabber, when a certain idea came into his mind, he would say it verbally, even though the people listening might not understand it properly, but it's as if he was saying it to himself, in order that he should bring this idea, this beautiful idea he's just discovered, he should bring that into the world. And then others, even remote places, would be able to understand it as well, because it's already broken through into this world. Now, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai achieved that for the entire Jewish people. Not only the ones who study Torah all the time. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, he was someone who studied Torah all the time, and there are some people who try to do that. The Talmud comments that they didn't succeed. But for everyone, even people who their main lives and their main efforts in the world are in practical things, they have a job doing this, doing that, they too should have the power to draw down through their Torah from above to below, even to a level where the lower level has not purified itself. It's in a raw state, so to speak. Now, for those who study Torah all the time and are very pure, special people, so this happens in a very inward way. For other people, it happens maybe in a more superficial way, but it still happens. And that superficial dimension eventually has an effect in the inner life of the person as well. And so this is a very powerful idea about the nature of Torah and the giving of Torah, because we see that Moses, we're approaching Matan Torah, we're approaching the Shavuot, the time of the giving of the Torah. Moses wanted to give the Torah in such a way that we would all have this power to bring Torah into the world, even into an imperfect world. And if he couldn't achieve it at the giving of the Torah itself, he wanted to achieve it by going into the land of Israel. He didn't achieve it that way, but he did achieve something very significant by looking, by gazing at the land of Israel. And that had the power that certain rare individuals like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai did have that power. And then Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, he bequeaths it to us so that we are able to learn Torah and transmit Torah, share Torah in an imperfect world, coming from an exalted level and bringing it down into the world. And that this is something which applies to every Jew, not considering what situation the person is in. And so therefore, and then it goes into, remember I mentioned that there's the idea of blessing. There's prayer, there's Torah study, prayer, and blessing. Now, I skipped over the bit with blessing. And blessing, in a sense, it's a kind of intermediary between prayer and Torah study. And so the idea is that Moses is, or Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, is giving the power, so there's the power of a Kohen, first of all. There's a power of a Kohen. He can bless everyone he can bless everyone. It's the blessing of the priest, the priestly blessing. But the Rebbe goes further than that. It's actually in the power of every single Jew to bless another person. As in a Hasidic gathering, we know that there was a message from heaven that a Hasidic gathering can achieve more than the angel Michael. And so as regards healing people, very often when there's a Hasidic gathering, someone says, so-and-so, the son of such-and-such a mother should have a refuah shleima, or something like that. So the power of a Hasidic gathering is an example of the way we each have a tremendous spiritual power. And so there we have this effect of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai with Torah and enabling us to have this this power. And that's why we remember the Torah of Moses, the servant of God. He's called the Ryan Mahemnia, the faithful shepherd. And similarly, the spreading out of Moses through the generations, especially Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who in various ways was similar to Moses. And he was able to have an effect on every individual Jew as well. And so therefore we learn the Torah also about the wondrous actions and events of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai himself. And that's something that applies to the whole Jewish people, at least on some level. And that's what Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said, that he would be able to make the whole world innocent of judgment till the time of Mashiach, and that that's something which relates to the whole Jewish people. And that is the basic message of this discourse, so all this has been added in the later generations, that just as the wisdom of Kabbalah was hidden in earlier generations, then it became revealed. And in Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai Zohar, it says that permission has been given then in the Zohar only to reveal it to the little group that was around Rabbi Shimon. But it's in more recent generations, as it says, it says in the Zohar itself, that with this book of yours, Rabbi Shimon, in other words, with the Zohar, in the later generation, people will go out of exile with Barachmi, with a way of mercy, when they are fully sustaining themselves through the profound teachings in the Zohar, which in fact is what the teachings of Hasidus are about. And that is really the quality of Hasidic teachings, the revelation of the inner dimension of Torah. And that's something that can come to every single Jew. And it comes to us through the power of the inward dimension that we are studying together at this moment. This gives us the power to draw down these high levels and bring them to everyone. And that really is that we should, final paragraph, we should merit the true redemption, that we will go out of exile with mercy, as it says in the Zohar, and as the Mashiach promised to the Baal Shem Tov, and the Baal Shem Tov asked Mashiach in a visionary experience, when are you coming? And Mashiach answered, kasher, yofutsu manatecha chutzo, when your fountain spread to the outside, that means the fountains of Hasidic teaching, of mystical teaching, then Mashiach will come, and then there will be the true revelation of the inner dimension of Torah, which is also called the Torah of Mashiach. And through that, it's about that it says, may he, Hashem, kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. That means through the learning of this beautiful dimension of Torah that we are learning together every week, with the true and complete redemption through Mashiach Tzidkenu, our righteous Mashiach, Lakodav Lamash. So that is our very special